parents have to have an option. Students have to have options because they cannot fit in the same standard mold that everybody thinks they should be. And people may talk about it, but when it comes to reality, you find a lot of pushback on helping kids being successful in every aspect.
Welcome to Reality Check, a weekly podcast about anything and everything having to do with education. I'm Jeannie Allen, founder and CEO of the Center for Education Reform. We chose the name Reality Check because a lot of what you read about education these days is often wrong or misleading. If you want to know what's really going on in American education, from K through career, you're going to need a reality check. My guest today is Eugene Slocum, the CEO and superintendent of the Alpha Academy Charter School and STEM Institute in Fayetteville, North Carolina. I've gotten a chance to get to know Mr. Slocum through our broader work in education and learn at least a little bit, enough to be dangerous, about the conditions of education, not just in Fayetteville in North Carolina, and the dedication of he and the leaders locally in trying to arrest the failures that have been too prevalent in recent weeks. So we're going to get into who he is, why he is, what he does, and let me just bring him in now. Welcome, Eugene Slocum.
Well, good morning, Ms. Allen. How are you doing this morning? I really appreciate being on the call with you.
So, Eugene, I will share with our listeners here at Reality Check that had a fantastic time at your school a few weeks ago. I had the honor and privilege of coming to talk with the graduates of K, 5, and 8, which I thought was so exciting. And you had shared with me that the reason you actually celebrate all those grades is because it helps really encourage kids to move on and move up. Tell me a little bit about that, and then we'll back into more about Alpha Academy.
Well, we believe that with the students that, and that was a pre-K.
Pre-K, right.
Right. We believe that students need to celebrate exactly the accomplishments that they have done. And the reality is, a lot of times we want to just tell kids it's okay. But we have to make sure that they understand they have to be accountable and that they have done a good job in doing so. The kids have worked. Some kids who did not graduate, they understand what they need to do. And I think just like in life itself, that we have to prepare our kids for the real life world in order for them to understand that they have to earn their space in order to move forward. And they have the ability to do so if we as the adults push them at the level that they need to be.
And where did you learn that? So tell us a little bit about you, Eugene. You came to found this school back in 2000. Why? What were you doing? Where were you? You grew up in not too far from there, correct?
Well, I grew up in New York. My mother's home is in a small town called Maxton, which had only one stoplight. And my father grew up in Louisiana. So every year we would move down, travel down as far as a vacation. Well, my parents got older, and they decided to move in Maxton. And I finished up school in Maxton. So it was a small town. And the experiences that I saw was moving from the north to the south, the academics, a lot of things was basically the fundamentals, the foundation. If you have the foundations on something, then you have options of doing things later on in life. I was a teacher, a middle school teacher, math teacher. Then I taught at Fayetteville State University. I graduated from there, and I also taught there. I was the director of the reading and writing program. I was a mentor, advisor, and taught classes. And I saw kids that needed more of a fundamental approach of what it is that they needed to do. There were students that came in at the college level that really were not prepared to be college students. So a lot of them struggled in the first year. And these are fundamental foundation courses that they were having problems with.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a concern, because how do you have college students come in and struggle on fundamental classes? Now, we're not talking about 12, 13-year classes. I'm talking about 8th and 9th grade classes that students should have that foundation in place. So that was something which I believed and decided to go into the charter movement in order to have an approach of how do we address the parents, how do we address the community, and being real about what it is that your child needs in order for them to have that good, solid foundation so they would have options.
So what did you think when you first saw that, when you first experienced students at the university where you were teaching, Fayetteville, coming in and not even having basics in eighth, and, you know, had no basics in college, let alone earlier, obviously?
Well, you know, the thing is, it wasn't the students' fault. I looked at the students, and they were good students. Some students were, you know, very eager to learn, but did not understand. But just like anything else, a student is able to say, well, if you want to give it to me and I can move forward, thank you. So as we all do, as human beings, we like to take the easy road out, but not realizing that somewhere down the line, around the corner, there's an accountability that you have to measure up to
mm-hmm.
in order to get that particular job. And talking with the students, they were frustrated because you had students who were, again, you have students who may be a valedictorian of a school compared to a student that had a C. And believe it or not, that student had a C was better prepared because of where they came from versus that valedictorian where they came from. So it was a kind of not a consistent across the board. It's like, where do you come from? What was your expectations? What were the school's expectations in order for you to be where you are?
Your story is not, it's exceptional, but the good news and the bad news is it's not unique, right? The good news is it's not unique, meaning there are a lot of people like you, Eugene Slocum from Alpha Academy in Fayetteville, North Carolina, who started out teaching in a traditional system, who went off and were part of the workforce, taught higher ed, and realized that students simply did not have the skills, the competencies, or frankly had been expected to be exceptional the way we know everybody can be if given that opportunity. And you went ahead and did something about it. When I say you're not unique, the bad news is there's so many challenges and problems out there that we have to resolve. So what made you decide? So you said I went into the charter movement, and you must have experienced a lot of challenges starting from scratch. You had a nice job. I assume you probably had a public pension attached to it. You could have just sat there and kept doing your job, but you decided to become an entrepreneur.
Well, one of the reasons is I was very involved with the students at the university, as well as taking them to the public school in order to have them tutor at the elementary level. And seeing that, you know, you have to really love what you do. And again, I love kids, and I take it personally because every child that I come in contact with, I'll treat them as my own. What can I do to help you to get to where you need to be? As my kids know, with my wife and I, we love our kids, but we're not going to give them the short end. We're going to tell them the truth. We're going to stay on them, and we're not their friend because we want to make sure they get out of our house because for them to be successful. And reaching out to the students and looking at that, the question was, how can I help these students? I could not help them but so much at the college level because they're basically grown. And most of them, a lot of them, they took the advice, but then again, others, they were already, you know, you're talking about 19, 20 plus years old. So that's where the thought came in. How can I affect the change of students before they get to this point? And that's when I, you know, did research as far as a charter school. And I, you know, I approached my wife and some others, and I said, you know, this is something we would like to do, I would like to do, in order to at least try to see what we can do. Because we were part of the community, we're part of this system to help students, but we could only do but so much. What I didn't realize was the politics that played into it. And that was the eye-opener, because when we were awarded the school, we thought everything was would run smoothly, but with the challenges, and it seemed like people were not interested in helping kids learn, because I was not against the public school. So it's not being against the public schools, because our kids went to it. And I'm not against any kind of form of education that would help students. But parents have to have an option. Students have to have options, because they cannot fit in the same standard mold that everybody thinks they should be. And people may talk about it, but when it comes to reality, you find a lot of pushback on helping kids being successful in every aspect.
Mm-hmm. And so in order to help them be successful, let's talk a little bit about what you did. So you started in 2000 with 60 students. You held classes in a gym, as so many new starts do. Again, the parallels with sort of the startup world of technology and new businesses is so similar and parallel to charters. Would that everybody was as positive about charters as they were about, you know, your basic startup company. But be that as it may, that's what it is. It's a startup enterprise. So you started with 60 students, held in a gym. Now you have 900 plus students, and you completed a 40,000 square foot expansion in 2016. And it was so exciting. I have to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, to be in Fayetteville, North Carolina, where not only did I get to see this work up close and real, but Eugene Slocum and his board broke ground on yet another area to expand because there's such demand. Why? Why is there demand, and how is it to break ground on a property like that? And let's also talk a little bit about the funds, too, because I think a lot of people don't understand that you have to actually go out and get your own money for that.
Well, I guess in looking at the need first, and then we'll talk about the funding. The need is there. Several years ago, like I said, we started off in a gym. We was in an old dentist's office. We was in an old daycare. And then we was blessed to be able to get funded for a building. Now, we'll talk about the funding aspect. But several years ago, we were blessed to meet Ms. Catherine Johnson. And, of course, we were doing different programs, and we met her and had to come to speak and to some students, to our students, because, again, the foundation is the science, math, technology, but, again, just the fundamental skills, which encompasses the STEM aspect. She came and spoke. She was very inspirational. I was asking the question, how come people didn't know about you? And she said, well, you know, this is me. So we dedicated our program, a program in her honor, and also as we develop into our first building, we dedicated a wing to her.
Okay, and let's just, before you go on, Catherine Johnson, Mrs. Johnson, the NASA employee leader rocket scientist that is featured in Hidden Figures. Let's just make sure everybody's clear about this incredible woman who you got to meet, and then you dedicated the center to her.
Yes. And she came down to it, and we dedicated it to her and her family, and we had a beautiful time. And this was several years ago, so it was, and it wasn't big. It was just kind of basically a room, which turned out to be four rooms, which now will turn out to be an expansion on the 40,000 square foot facility. And she was very inspirational. She's over 100 years old at this time, but it's about being dedicated. Is about having the skills in order to do something and being the best at it. So we was able to do that, and we're moving forward as we're doing this expansion, which will include the high school, a research component as well. So we're definitely blessed with that.
And how are the local leaders and the community engaging with you?
Well, the politics is still there.
Okay, and describe what that means for people who aren't typically engaged in that locally.
Well, the politics is the building that we built, we had to get funding from a loan. So we do not have grants. We could not get grants. People would shun us. They would say yes. But we wind up, we have a mortgage. So on each phase that we have, when this phase is completed, it'll be over 100,000, about 100,000 square feet of building that we have a mortgage on, a monthly mortgage. As a public school, they don't have a monthly mortgage. The leaders in the community, we have good results because from what we do, people are proud of what we do. But then again, you have a lot of naysayers, and you have those from the political aspect that feel like you're taking away something from the community as far as funding for the regular schools. Well, let me say this. People do not understand that the public schools still get their funding for their students, but there's not a lot talking about spoken about the private schools or those students that go to private schools that are not counted into the public numbers themselves. So there's a lot of students there for the public in order to do, but there's a lot of students that are in different religious and private schools. Well, this aspect of the charter school provides the parents an opportunity of being in a school that they do not have to pay for, but as a charter school, we are accountable just like a public school with our scores, our finances, our EC, all of that.
Like a traditional public school, because you are a public school. The only thing different is that your governance is more local, decentralized, and accountable, where the money flows directly to the school, not to the district, where it gets then pushed out in different ways. And yep. I also want to just stop on something you said. You have a mortgage. Traditional public schools don't have a mortgage. So doesn't that just kill you that property taxes are collected in Fayetteville and the county? And the state and local people or coffers go and fund construction projects, often without any accountability, by the way, and you don't get any of those funds to build your own buildings, despite the fact that you are pushing up to 1,000 kids and you'll have probably twice that much by the time in different facilities by the time your high school is built.
It's problematic because not only that, those dollars that we're putting into the building takes away from the, you know, some of the educational and the we cannot pay teachers in the same salary and the same benefit as the traditional public school. So, I mean, teachers are qualified and they are good teachers that we have, but I cannot compete with the traditional school system because of the additional dollars that we have to spend on facilities, buses, and books.
Right, right. And you know, you and North Carolina does better than a lot of states. I mean, North Carolina is ranked fairly high on CER's Parent Power Index. It has a legislature that's mainly supportive of educational options like charters and other forms. A governor, though, that's these days is strongly opposed. And so, you know, the kind of the glass is really half full more than half empty. You have personal education savings accounts in the state. You've had a rich history of standards. Many people, by the way, Eugene, on Reality Check, who are our followers and listeners, and thanks to all of them again, will wonder why I talk to people in North Carolina so much. I have had the lieutenant governor on. I've had some of your colleagues locally. We'll be having Mark Johnson, the public superintendent of public instruction in the state. And I want to just share that it's because North Carolina kind of has it all. It's urban and suburban and rural. It has had lots of different political conditions, pro and con education reform. It has been a microcosm. It doesn't hurt that I married North Carolina. And so I have family and a lot of friends. And actually, CER helped create the state's first charter school law. And I always find it fascinating that, well, we could do this in every state, and we will get to every state in the nation eventually on Reality Check, Eugene. Isn't it interesting that there's so much going on in the state of North Carolina, and yet that's not the state you wake up reading about in the New York Times?
That's correct. And that's one of the things that, you know, it baffles that, you know, we do so much with the kids, and kids are being very successful, but you don't hear anything else about it. Now, if something negative happened, we'll be the first one. But there's a lot going on in North Carolina. The opportunities are growing. The kids are growing. Things are changing. And, of course, I believe we have some of the best colleges in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, you know, everything flows from there because a lot of kids want to come to North Carolina to go to school. So our schools need to reflect that as well with that high level of expectation.
And your schools can also pave a road, don't you think, to improved communities economically, on a family level, culturally, because a lot of your communities in and throughout particularly rural areas of North Carolina, but even right in Fayetteville, that's obviously more populous, have really suffered from economic decline. What's the link for our friends out there between education and the economy?
Well, that's the sad part, because from the, you know, with our richness, we have communities that are suffering. And I think from the standpoint that if you talk about the truth, and I think people don't want to hear the truth, if you talk about what really is important and what needs to happen and put it out there, you will get pushback, of course. But ultimately, it will change things because the workforce is shrinking as far as quality. So many employees are looking for people, looking for students that, you know, cannot read effectively or cannot count effectively. But they're graduating from school and doing so. With the technology field, that's another aspect, the medical field. So there's a lot that, and let me back up. I think from the standpoint, schools are afraid to say that, you know, we have to keep so many of these kids back, or so many kids are being retained. Well, we have to start from the bottom. We have to make sure the accountability is strictly at the bottom and move forward. Tell the truth and make sure people are accountable for what kids are supposed to know.
Right. Okay, and speaking of accountability, I would be remiss if I didn't ask someone who's at Ground Zero working on the local level daily what he thinks about the politicization, I can say that, folks, of charter schools in the election cycle. I mean, many Democrats, Booker, Cuomo, Landrieu, have supported charters, but on a political level, a lot of the presidential candidates are beating them up. How have you been able to, so first of all, what do you think, and how have you been able to keep it so nonpartisan and bipartisan at the local level? What can you tell us to do nationally?
Well, again, it's a matter of the continue to do well, regardless of what people said, and I think from the standpoint, a lot of it is along political lines. But we have, you know, it's interesting that I have people that believe in what we do, but will not speak on what we do because of the politics. You know, because, you know, a lot of people, since they do not like it, they may not support me because they do not like what's going on. But it's not a like or dislike when it comes to students or kids. When people start politicizing kids' education, about what's good, what shouldn't be good, what's bad, and do that to where it affects the outcome, because they're not, the certain schools are not getting resources. And it's no different if you look at it in rural areas, where there are certain schools that do not get certain things, but other schools get it because of where they're located.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start looking at what are we actually doing, and how is it affecting the kids themselves, people are looking at that very, it's sad. And I use the term of this, the education is a business. We have a product. The students are our product. We are only the only industry that supports something bad or produce a bad product and still continue to progress.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense, particularly not only does that not make sense, particularly when you see the opposite effect of schools like yours. Alpha is 61% African-American, 15% Hispanic. Actually, I think it's more than 61% African-American. And you have ranked better than 58% of all North Carolina elementary schools. By the way, I should go back to and lower income, right? Lower income working class. So ranked better than 58% of all North Carolina elementary schools, 70% of middle schools in 2018. Congratulations. Oh, my gosh. Right? And so these are the kinds of institutions, schools, stories that should be told daily so that we encourage, motivate, and activate others to start groups like yours, right?
Yes, I agree. And what we do not go out and chop somebody's head off about because you're not talking about us. What we do is continuously push our students to be better. When students go out, when they go different places, they have to represent where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we look at. From those students, it speaks for themselves. Not for me talking about it, but seeing exactly what goes on, how students are conduct themselves, and how they're learning. That, regardless of what people say, regardless of what aisle you sit on politically, look at the child and let them speak for itself.
And finally, you have talked about expansion plans. Tell our listeners a little bit about your expansion plans and what is it that you need from the state in order to be able to achieve those plans.
Well, I have been approached by different communities in the southern area, Robertson and Scotland County, in order to help the community. There's pushback on the education from school boards and different people who believe that charter schools are not the answer. But parents are interested in having a choice, an option. So what I ask for is just given the opportunity in order to have certain schools in certain areas that can help that community and help those parents. So only thing that we ask for is a chance and an opportunity for that. There are so many schools, and again, I am not against public schools. What I am against is schools that fail, does not do anything, and they continue to produce a poor product. That's across the board. But if we, and as you know with charter schools, if you do not produce, if the students are not doing what they need to do, they will eventually shut you down. Well, we know there are schools, as far as public schools, that have been producing a poor product for years, and they got grandkids in the school, and it's still operating. So what we ask the state is just to provide us that opportunity in order for us to give those communities a measurement or something to say, well, you know, that can help them. And really, it can help the school system as well because, again, we're not against them, but we ask for their support as well.
It can indeed help the school system. It can help the economy. It's one of the reasons, frankly, education quality, that more and more people are moving to North Carolina every year. It's not just because of the low taxes. People don't move places unless they can educate their children. And the panoply of options out there is driving that. So Eugene Slocum, head of Alpha Academy, Fayetteville, North Carolina. Ladies and gentlemen, my listeners, you can learn more about him through our website, edreform.com, and obviously link to wherever you get this podcast. I want to thank you so much, Eugene, for your work. Keep it up. I know sometimes it is discouraging, but what you are doing for students, educators, and the community is not overlooked by those of us who know, and I look forward to working with you on expansion plans.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate giving an opportunity, And I will say this, you know, at times it may be discouraging, but what makes the difference is seeing my kids, and I use the term my kids, as seeing them achieve. That is what makes the difference. So as long as I'm able to do that and being blessed with the given the opportunity, I'm happy.
That's what it's all about. Thank you, Eugene Slocum, for joining me on Reality Check.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Reality Check. You can subscribe to Reality Check at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn, and never miss an episode. Visit us online at edreform.com and follow CER on Twitter at edreform and me, Jeannie Allen. I look forward to exploring the world of education with you and another prominent guest next time. See you then.